Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for November the 6th, 2017. This is David Corey along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thank you for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Good evening, David. Yes, tonight our special guest is Brian Wizard, a Vietnam War veteran. He's now an acclaimed writer, an artist, a filmmaker, and a musician. Before David introduces Brian, though, I'd like to remind our audience that the Veterans News Hour is not only a news and talk show, but we also welcome callers to participate in our show by calling in with comments and questions. Our toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Again, our toll-free call-in number for you to call in with your comments and questions is 1-888-627-6008. Back to you, David.
Our special guest tonight is Brian Wizard, who served in the United States Army as a helicopter door gunner in the Vietnam War. Brian was on our show on May 1st of this year, and he's back tonight to continue our discussion. We've been planning and looking forward to this show for several weeks, and we are very pleased to have Brian back on our show. Brian is the writer of numerous books, including, among many subjects, some historical fictions about the Vietnam War. And he is the producer of a movie called Brian Wizard's Vietnam, Then, Again, and Beyond. The film won an award from the New York Indie Film Festival for Best Documentary Film. The film shows what the Vietnam War was like from the perspective of a helicopter door gunner and has actual film footage from the war filmed by Brian and other aviators. I invite our listeners tonight to check out his website, which is brianwizard.com. He has books and artwork for sale, including his ebook entitled Smoke Ships, Always Leading the Way. He recently compiled what he called the Brian Wizard's 21st Century Digital Vietnam War Anthology and made four books and a video available on his website, brianwizard.com, at a special discount for a short time. As an accomplished author, he will be sharing with us tonight his insights for veterans about how they can write about their military experience, including to support a disability claim with the VA. So without further ado, let us welcome Brian Wizard to the Veterans News Hour. How are you tonight, Brian?
Oh, it's all very excellent over here in Branson, Missouri.
Wow, what's that like?
Well, today was kind of low-key. It was rainy all day, but I went out and I met a bunch of veterans. And yesterday I did even better because it was nice and sunny. So it's pretty good.
It's a big change from Oregon, perhaps?
It's all very white at my house right now, so I'm happy to be here.
Okay. With snow, I suppose, huh? How cold is it back
yeah,
in Oregon?
It's, you know, hovering around the freezing.
Wow. Wow. Well, Brian, it's great to have you on our show. We really enjoyed you being on our show back on May the 1st, and as you know, we wanted to talk about the importance that you're an accomplished writer. We wanted to talk about sharing some of your insights with our listeners, primarily veterans and veteran families. So why don't we jump right into that? Go ahead.
Well, you guys are lawyers helping the veterans get their claims successfully through the VA. And I had a very similar problem, but long, long ago when I wasn't allowed to have any help from anybody. And writing is what actually saved my day, because everything I did in Vietnam ended up all jumbled up in my head, kind of like a puzzle still in its box. In many, many pieces. And then I sat down and I wrote it out, you know, using my journal and my 35 millimeter still photos and my Super 8 movie footage. and pieced it all together, ending up with a complete puzzle that I could look at and go, oh, I understand so much more about me and my combat experience. And then from there, I could state my claim much more clearly to people who were in the VA who never, ever experienced combat.
I see. So would you say it had a therapeutic effect as well as a practical effect for the claim?
First and foremost, very cathartic. What is the word? That's a tough word.
Therapeutic?
Catharsis.
Oh, yes, cathartic effect, yes.
I could see myself, and therefore I could see, well, no wonder I'm having certain issues, because I've been conditioned to war, because I was in it full on for an extended period of time, and it changes a person.
Right.
It makes them different than the guy who didn't go. So writing it down cleared it up in my head and gave me the power to talk about it. And if you don't talk about it, you don't explain yourself, these people in the VA, they aren't psychic. So for everybody to do that will help them personally overcome any of the questions they have about, you know, what happened.
Right.
Even though they might not have a clear sense of how it all unfolded until they stop and look at it on their own. And the thing about writing is good fun, because you're telling stories. I mean, a lot of people don't really know how to write, and that's okay. You don't have to know how to write. My first manuscript of my book, Permission to Kill, was basically a 444-page sentence.
Wow.
But I threw it out there. I put it down. And from there, it was just a matter of editing, you know. But I started out, I had it belted out on an old Underwood typewriter. We're in the 21st century now. Mm. And even if you don't know how to type, you can't read your writing once you wrote it. There's this neat devices out there and all the electronic equipment, voice to text. You can just talk into the machine and it will put down what you say in pixels.
Right.
And you need to edit it, because it will put the wrong words down because it doesn't understand exactly what you're trying to say, and it doesn't put any punctuations in. But
right.
You can tell your story. Everybody can tell their story if they think about it, because they were there. And the important part about the VA claim is, again, these people running the VA, the adjudication offices and everything, they aren't psychic. They don't know what you went through. They can look at your military documentations, your DD-214 and your medical transcripts, and those forms are thin on detail. If complete at all, they're not complete. You know, a lot of stuff gets left out. So if you write it down and give them something to hold on to and read, nothing too long, because they're only going to give you about 7.5 minutes per claim. So you write down your experience and what caused your problem that leads you to asking for VA compensation. Short, clear, concise, to the point, so that you understand it, so that they understand it. I think you stand a better chance of making some more, you know, headway with them.
Right. Now let me turn this over to Richard Hurley, because I know he has a lot of experience too in trying to help the veterans that we represent in writing up statements. So over to you, Richard.
Yeah, Brian, how you doing?
All good.
As you were kind of indicating, very few people, including veterans, like to write or can write. As a result, they really think of putting what happened in writing, unfortunately, to many VSOs, veteran service officers, don't realize the value of a thorough personal statement, as you were just saying, which educates the VA about the veteran's disabilities and what caused them. When most veterans do try to write down their memories, they usually provide very little information. For the most part, it's like pulling teeth to get them to open up. I think I often understand why that is, but the challenge is getting them to see why it's necessary in order to prove their cases to the VA. You know, I think one of the first things I do when I'm interviewing a new client is I tell them right off the bat that I want them to write their story, their life story, or as I used to call it in my civil practice, a day in the life. Tell me about your life story. And I think that does two things, and you've been touching upon it as well, Brian. One, it helps David and I when we are preparing the case for the hearing and what we need to obtain in terms of evidence. But I also think it's extremely therapeutic. And probably the most common comment I get when I'm after a few weeks or a month or two, you know, the veteran calls me up and we talk about their case a little bit. And they'll say, well, I'm still working on that statement, Mr. Hurley, but it's really hard. And when they first sat down with me, you know, they made it sound like, oh, don't worry, I'll get it out to you over the weekend. So I think it really gets them to have to go into, you know, into their memory and remember a lot of really, really tough things that happened while they were in service. But as you said and as you found, it's very therapeutic once they do that.
Very therapeutic. I mean, it is the base of healing, because everybody knows that until the wounded person realizes they're wounded, they can't heal. It can't be done. If you don't know you're wounded, you're not going to heal from it. So you write it down, and the beautiful thing about writing is you're writing to yourself. That's who you're real. That's your number one audience is you. And there's nothing to be ashamed of because you're just talking to yourself. You know. But then the beautiful thing about writing is you can pass it on and share it to somebody over time and space. I mean, I've got 12 novels known worldwide, and I am sharing my writing and my thoughts with people I'll never meet, you know, but they have enjoyment and education coming from it, from a guy they'll never meet. And that's with the VA, you're not going to meet the people making the decisions, but they're going to meet you through your writing. And basically what you just commented on was everybody having writer's block. But it's like driving a car. We all start off not really knowing how to drive a car until we get in the car and somebody helps us a little bit. You know, that's the clutch, that's the brake, that's the gas, that's the shifter. And once you start to drive, that kind of all comes together and you realize that, oh, yeah, I step on the gas and I go forward. I step on the brake and I stop. So when I teach people the art of writing, the number one lesson is sit down, shut up, and write. It's that easy. So when people are telling you that, what? Go ahead.
Yeah, I tell them to be spontaneous. Don't worry about punctuations, your grammar. Just get
Don't
your thoughts down
about
on paper. Yeah, you just get your thoughts down on paper and see how it goes, and then we go back and we edit. You know, another thing that you were touching on that I found, you were saying that, you know, no one's going to meet, you know, that you don't really meet you. But when a veteran does these writings for David and I, it does put a face to a file so that when a decision review officer or the BVA is reading, hopefully they're reading the entire file before the hearing, but we never can rely upon that, as I've been finding out. It gives the hearing officer, the judge, an opportunity to to see who this person is. So then when the veteran walks in for the hearing, you now can put a face to that statement. And it's a way to kind of cut through some of the minutiae and get more personal. You know, it's like when I was doing a lot of criminal law and civil law, I always made sure my clients wore a jacket and tie because of the presentation. Well, that's what a statement does. It's the presentation.
And, it is the presentation.
You know, it's extremely important. But, you know, the VSOs and these DAVs, you know, it's amazing. I can't even think of any of them in any of the cases that I've inherited from them where I've seen a personal statement developed on behalf of the veteran. And then the veteran gets denied the claim because it's not service-connected. Well, if the VSO had done their homework and if they knew what they were doing, they realized that that statement is evidence, important evidence.
And his beautiful thing that I like to do is photographs.
Yeah.
You saw my spokeship book, right?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, that's great. That's a great point. And not only that, but your films too, Brian.
Exactly. You know,
yeah, the picture speaks a thousand words.
Yeah, because it's obvious that my disability came from my service because the photo book shows the photo of the action that changed me, that made me different, and in the word they like to use, disabled. I like to use the word enhanced because I'm not a negative guy. It doesn't do any good to be negative. It doesn't help anything. You know? So the thing of it is, if you can take your time and pull out a couple of photos and write a story around that, not a long story, I'm talking a paragraph or two, you know, to show you in your combat role and where it led to that injured you. That puts a face on it.
Brian, I know another important thing I think that you probably would agree about is kind of the importance of a foundation, because as I recall from our conversation back in May, going to Vietnam profoundly changed your life. Your life had been an excellent life growing up, and this just really altered the kind of the trajectory of your life. So telling the story of the veteran's life would include a foundation, wouldn't you agree, of what their life was like before service?
Yeah, that's just called a setup. Every story I've ever written has a prologue or a preface, and that's the setup. And that's where the story starts in the foundation. It tells, like in my Permission to Kill story, it talks about what led me to joining the Army, where I was coming from, childhood, into manhood, making the first adult decision of my life. And how do I go into adulthood without education, without support? And in the prologue, it explains that, of where I was coming from, and then the story talks about where I went, what I did, and how it affected me. You know, and Permission to Kill has two sequels that continue the how it affected me. You know,
and that includes Permission to Live, right?
It was Permission to Kill, Back in the World, Permission to Live, and now I have a continuation on it that takes it up to 45 years after I joined the Army. And everything that's in it, it all ties back down to that first adult decision to join the Army, and how I was put in harm's way and never really taken out of it. As it is today, I still have 1 foot in the combat zone and 1 foot in society. And
I see.
I'm always being torn. I'm torn between the two because I do not mind a little bit of combat. That's why for 6 years I was a private contractor, you know?
Right. Let me ask you this, Brian, because I know, kind of on a personal note, you're starting what you call an assimilation tour. Can you tell us what that's about?
Okay, so for 18 years, I was homeless, living on, you know, in vehicles, in the forest, on the beach, people's floors, whatever, wherever, right? But I was traveling the world and having fun my way, on a smile and a dime. And that's how I wrote my first novel, was done on the road, basically. And it took that 18 years before the United States government came around to declaring the Vietnam War a war 13 years after it was over. So all that time there, they couldn't even recognize combat stress as a disability. And it took 4 years of fighting them. That's one way to put it. Another way to put it is 4 years of educating them of what combat stress is all about and how it, is detrimental to a guy's life if it's unattended. It was unattended for 18 years. I fought him for 4 years. I educated him, and I got the 100% disability. Then I went, and I moved way out into the wilderness for 26 years. And the assimilation tour is, here I am, out in the world, Branson, at the Big Veteran Week, trying to assimilate into society and basically promoting my work as it is my greatest legacy, my writing, and my movie. And so I'm just trying to get out there and make it work. I'm making no promises it'll be successful, and it doesn't matter because I still have my piece of paradise out in the wilderness, which I'll go back to and finish out my end days. But I'm just out here 50 years after the problem, just trying to correct it and maybe get a new start to end the life with.
You know, I certainly wish you the greatest success with that. Now you're going to be meeting with some other veterans there in Branson this week for Veterans Day events. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, the first day I met the people who were putting on the film festival, and I showed them my film, and they said, yeah, next year, man, we're going to have you up here for that. You know, it's too late this year because, you know, they got it all scheduled out and everything. And I'm just walking around and passing out my little flyer, Assimilation Tour, because all my e-books, I'm selling them for $2. You know, in my 66-minute award-winning documentary, $2, downloadable. You just download it. You sit at home and download it. It's just like watching Netflix or HBO. But it's not Netflix or HBO. It's Brian Wizard. But it's real stuff. There's no Hollywood remake in any of it. And the first part of the movie is actual combat footage shot by me and my crew members of frontline and beyond, you know, doing the real thing, doing the real dirty work. And then the next piece is where I go back to Vietnam 30 years later, and that's a very healing piece for me as well as the Vietnamese. And you see how that we actually won the hearts and minds of the South Vietnamese people. That was very important for me to see. That was nice. And then the third part is, because of my writing and my movie, the Smithsonian got in touch with me because they have a helicopter that had a history of being a smoke ship. I don't know if your listeners know what a smoke ship is, but I said,
yeah, go ahead and tell us. I know we talked about that back in May, but go ahead and tell our listeners tonight really kind of the unique mission of a smoke ship.
Yeah, well, in a combat assault helicopter company, there'd be 9 troop-carrying helicopters that would fly in a tight two-row formation, and they would take the ground pounders out to the area of operation, drop them in a landing zone, so they could go and sweep an area that, you know, has reported Viet Cong or North Vietnamese activity. But you ask any pilot of a those troop carriers, what was the most dangerous part of their mission. They'll tell you, those 15 seconds of taking a perfectly fast-moving helicopter and landing it in front of the enemy to take an aim at it and shoot them. So just before they were coming in for a landing, Pollution 4, my helicopter, would come in and lay down a smoke screen. I sent her 50 gallons of oil that, by the command of the pilot, was pumped into the exhaust. And, of course, you know how oil is. When you throw it on a fire, it comes out with a big blue cloud of smoke. And we'd lay that smoke screen between, in front of the enemy, you know, between the enemy and the landing helicopters. And it saved a lot of American lives. And we got shot at first, and we had our fun, because after doing that, then we'd go back on what we called the hunt, and we'd find the enemy and engage. And it was full-on war. It was good stuff. We crashed. We got shot up a bunch. It happens. But out of the whole game, we won every fight but one of them. So that was pretty good odds.
But yeah, what was that one that you didn't?
We were in Cambodia. Don't tell anybody, okay?
Okay.
And we engaged this platoon of North Vietnamese, and one of them got lucky and shot the hydraulics out of the helicopter. So if you remember back in the day what it's like to drive a car, or if you lose your power steering, it's not, you don't have full control, and down you go. And the thing of it is, my writing of my novel, pretty much all words, right? But the theater is in your mind, and that's what writing is all about. It's not just about putting words down that don't mean anything. One word connects to the next word, connects to the sentence, it connects to the paragraph, and the reader has an image in their mind of what you're thinking, what you're explaining, what your words are depicting. And that's where the veteran, writing down the story about why his claim is valid,
right,
will put a face on his claim, put action to his story that the adjudication officers can understand better than reading medical files, DD-214s.
Right.
Because those are thin. They don't tell the personal story. It's the personal story that's going to save the day. That's the evidence. You know? When you say Jack and Jill ran up the hill, what'd they do up there? There's the question right there. Let's answer that. What did Jack and Jill do up that hill? Yeah. Fill that in a blank in, and then you've got yourself a story.
Right.
So.
Right. And as you said, I think, service records, the forms, the paperwork, the DD-214, the performance reports, whatever's in the personnel records, never tell the full story. I think that's something that Richard Hurley and I try to emphasize to the clients, that the veterans we try to help. That very point that you've been emphasizing.
The veterans can take the information in those files and write the story around what they have. Because right away it says what the MOS is, right? What is a 67A1F? That's the helicopter door gunner.
Right.
Then tell a story about what it's like to be the helicopter door gunner, riding around on a pedestal for the enemy to shoot at. Oh, that brings some life to this 67A1F MOS code, you know. Door gunner, what does it mean? It means you're sitting on a pedestal riding around in front of the enemy. Oh, a much better picture than looking at a DD-214 that says MOS. 67A1F.
Right.
Nothing. You know?
Right.
So, if they have photographs, just one photograph, write a story around it. 214, take the details out. Where did you serve? You know, who were you with? and what was your MOS, and tell the story about that, because the story is there. The story is in the file. It's just not explained on a personal level. And that's what writing comes in, because you, and again, today, 21st century, voice to text. Just sit there and talk into the machine, talk to yourself, tell your story, and edit it. Or have somebody else edit it. Because the reason people need to, I edit. I have an editor. Everybody who writes needs an editor, because the writer is too close to the story. And they can't see the mistakes. You know, they can't see the redundancy. And the story is cleaned up if you have it right, an editor.
That's great advice, yeah. Brian, let me ask you this question. Some of our clients in the past, we've asked them, have you sent any letters home? Perhaps there are, we can get statements from family members that would have recollections. Sometimes they would write letters home and tell stories of what was going on. It kind of brings back the memories. And some people, of course, keep diaries at the time. What are your thoughts on that? Did you find the a lot of the soldiers you served with were writing letters home a lot, keeping diaries, that sort of thing?
I kept a diary, and my other gunner kept a diary, and I used those to help tell the story, because, you know, it brought back the times and places where we went and what we did, as did the photographs, as did the, you know, Super 8 movie films. And then when I got home, of course, my mother kept every letter, and there it all was, a treasure trove of information that I wrote down, it's pretty weird to read that stuff too. But I will admit, I don't know anybody who actually told the details of what they were doing when they were writing home to their mom or their people, because it would be too. I couldn't tell my mother. Yeah, I went out. I killed three people today, and they almost killed me first, but they didn't. I couldn't tell her that.
Yeah, and I think that's common. That's advice that we hear from a lot of veterans too. That their letters were kind of sanitized. They were sparing their parents, their brothers and sisters, other relatives and friends back home. Really, how bad it was. But it's still a good way to kind of bring back jog memories of, as you say, kind of time and place and particular events and all that can be.
Well, if you look at it like the whole story is a jigsaw puzzle still in its box, and you do your research and what evidence you have. You can take your DD-214 and pull out what they have there and tell a story around it. You can take your medical files and tell about why you have the inclusion of medical needs in your file and talk about how that happened. You know, and if you got a photograph, you can write around the photograph what happened before you took the photograph, what the photograph depicts, and then how you felt after it. You can take them there with the written word. That's what writing is all about. It's sharing the experience with someone down the road. But with the VA people, don't hold back. Tell them a fact, I had a lot of, I'm going to call it fun, because it was adventurous, it was dangerous, it was full on 100% adrenaline all the time. And when you're pumping adrenaline, you're not really feeling sad. You're pretty wired. You know what I mean? Pumping it. Yes, I am having fun. I am stealing the enemy's flag from the enemy's stronghold, and they're shooting at me. Oh, cool.
Yeah. Richard Hurley and I have talked about that in some of our other shows about how your film actually shows you capturing some of the enemy flags, swooping down in the helicopter, and just slow enough to grab the flags and then continue on your mission there. So pretty cool stuff, but you know, it's great to see it in film. You know, it's describing in words would be one thing, but actually to see it. So, well, Brian, you offered a lot of great advice. Go ahead.
It's an amazing piece of work because it takes you right there. And the novel takes you there in text. And that's why the veterans can take the adjudication officers to their position in life as a combat soldier, living it, doing it, sweating it out, you know, crying when it's time to cry, laughing when it's time to laugh. And those might be totally opposite times than an adjudication officer who wasn't there would understand. You know what
right.
I mean? Because it's a different world. It's a different psyche. You know?
Right.
What would hurt me wouldn't be the drama and trauma of war. It would be afterwards. When you come down from the adrenaline and then your body just starts to shake. And you want to cry a little bit. It's just the release. It's not that you're a baby or anything. It's just a fair release. You know, you got to let go. Yeah. And then you have, you know, a couple hours of that. You wake up and do it again.
Right.
You know, and that's what you write about. You write about what it was like to be in that photograph. Of course, I recommend, as an example, for $2, you can get the photo book, the novel, the video. And the beautiful part about the video, it shows that, well, I don't know, a lot of people told me when I came back, Brian, just let that war go. Just forget about it. Just forget about it. No, you can't forget about it. It's like learning math. Somebody says, well, forget about learning math. You can't forget about learning math. The numbers are still the same. You know, and you can't forget about your war experience. So you write it down. Turn it into something positive, in the sense that it's a creation of your own. You share it with the VA. They read it. They learn about it. They see you. They smell the smells. They feel the pounding, you know, the adrenaline-charged heart. And then they'll make the decision.
Right. Well, I think that's great advice. And one other thought that I have on that, Brian, because Richard and I have represented veterans going back to World War II and every war and peacetime event since then. And I know we've encountered a lot of veterans that they just don't like to talk about their experience. But I think one thing that strikes me about what your advice is that once they put it down in writing, they can share, like you said at the beginning of our show, you can share that story with anyone around the planet without having to personally retell the whole story again. I mean, it's down in paper, it's in the film, it's in the audio recording, and it's there forever, basically. And I think that's another great thing. And I like your advice, too, about the voice-to-text option.
It's right there. It's right there on a lot of devices. You know, your Samsung smartphone. Voice to text app, just touch the little screen and then start talking. And
right.
It won't put the periods in. It won't put all the words in that you say correctly. I mean, I get a lot of emails and like people are writing that way to me. And
right.
I'm not Brian. I'm Bryant. I'm Brain. You know? I go, okay. And then you got to look, okay, the periods should be between that word and that word. Oh, that would make a better sentence, you know. A lot of editing it, but once you do it, it's done.
Right.
You know, and but telling the story, once you take that box, that jigsaw puzzle out of the box, and you sit down and you put some continuity to all the jumbled up thoughts that are in your head, and you put it down with continuity, and you understand it, then you can calm down a little bit and go, well, it does make a lot of sense. And then you can share that lot of sense with other people. Now, I did it big time, okay? novel, photo book, movie, you know, sequels. But I liked, once I learned how to write, I liked it. You know, and there's nothing wrong with it. The only thing wrong about writing is today people don't read. And it seems pretty much like an exercise of futility. But the VA claim process is, you know, what do you call that? Pigeonholed. That's what you're writing for. It's right. The purpose. So you want clear, short, concise, understandable, to the point. If you could throw a photograph in, right around your the details on your DD-214 and medical profiles, you'll have a story to tell that will have a face on it, and they'll smell it, they'll feel it, they'll know more about it, and they'll go, oh, I get it.
Right. Well, that's
what
super.
You want.
And I hope our listeners are taking this to heart, because whether it's for kind of therapeutic effect, and I know you're a lot of your life's work since the service has been as an artist, a writer, a filmmaker, and there's certainly the therapeutic effect, but there's also the entertainment aspect and kind of memorializing, capturing those memories so others can understand them and can learn from them. I think those are all very important. But there's also the very practical thing which a lot of veterans need, and that is to be kind of inspired that, yes, they can do what needs to be done. They can tell their story, and whether it's if they don't like to type or they can't type or they can't write, you know, the voice to text electronic gizmos on their smartphones or on their computers are all good things. But certainly the advice you've given is good inspiration to encourage.
Yeah, well, the best part about the voice to text is you can blame the electronic device for all the errors.
Right. And you know, like you say, editing is just part of the process. It's not a big deal. But now before we go, I want to give Richard Hurley a chance. We haven't heard from him in a while. Richard, and then Brian, I'd like you to remind our listeners again what they can find on your website, brianwizard.com, more about your books, films, and artwork. So over to you, Richard.
Well, I just wanted to say, Brian, it's great having you on the show, and you're sharing your experiences about your service and what you're offering and telling the vets, because as lawyers, we can tell veterans what they need to do, but then when you hear from another veteran who has done it and it's been successful for you in the process of getting your claims litigated and resolved. So I really appreciate your time on the show.
It did all boil down to my work having to educate the people in the VA. But mind you, all those people are gone, and there's new people, and they need educating. You know.
And some of them were never veterans, and they certainly were never in combat. Some of them. So it really requires, like you say, Brian, education.
I never had anybody in the VA dealing with my claim that was a veteran. They didn't know anything about it. And so, you know, what are they going to know? You got to explain it to them. You got to put a face on the file, you know, and take them there. You got to take them there. That's why if you got just one photograph, you can build the story around it. If you got two, that's nice too. And if people want an example, $2, my smoke ship book. Perfect for the people who don't like to read, because it's under 5,000 words with 169 photographs.
Wow.
That will take you right there, you know. And then the photographs are taken from the video. And if you want to see those photographs come alive, you play the video. Yeah. And the thing about writing, as I say, it carries on through time and space.
Yeah.
I mean, Vietnam happened 50 years ago. And the new generations, they find it interesting because they find it historic, you know, and it's nothing like anything they've lived. And they think it's amazing. It's great. Writing is great because you can pass it on. Some people have taken my example and written just for their family so they have heirlooms to pass to the younger generations of what they did, what they were about, putting a face on Grandpa when he was 19. You know, so that's pretty cool.
Oh, it is. Yeah, those are all great things. And we really appreciate you being on the show again, Brian. Thank you for your great advice. We hope listeners will check out your website, which is brianwizard.com, for more about Brian's books, his films, and his artwork there. And please check that out. And, Brian, you have a standing invitation to join us again sometime and keep us updated on how things are going. I certainly hope that you have a great week there and Veterans Day this week there in Branson, Missouri. And before we go, anything else you'd like to add?
Go to my website, download any of my stuff for the war aspect of it all, or other books. I have like a dozen novels of various topics. But I also have the contact button if anybody has any questions they want to ask me personally.
Oh, that's great.
Send an email. Yeah, hit the email button, and I'll talk to you.
Great.
And, you know, because maybe they want a little bit more detail about who they are, what they did, and how do they transcribe it into something somebody else might understand.
Right.
Writing is a process, just like changing a tire. You got to know what to do, but once you know what to do, you can change the next tire easy.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yep. Okay.
Well, very good, Brian. Thanks so much, and hope you have great success in your current tour and more immediately this week there in Branson. So thanks again, and good luck to you.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Take care.
Eric, we'll see you. All right, bye.
Okay, stay in touch. Bye-bye. Well, that was great, Rick. It was really, we really appreciate Brian being on our show, and I know we've got a few other things we want to talk about, so why don't I turn it back over to you, Richard?
Great. Thanks, David. And before I get into some of our boilerplate items, I just want to mention and Corey and Hurley, we send out our prayers and thoughts to those out in Texas. What happened on Sunday was horrific. And so, you know, I just want to mention that. I know, David, you feel the same way. It's just it's horrible.
Yep.
Something like that happening in a church. So, you know, it's all over the news. So everybody's hearing about it and hearing all the commentary. So just keep your prayers to all those people in Texas. And back to some of our boilerplate items, like the Coaching Into Care program. If you are a family member of a veteran who has left the service and is having a tough time transitioning to civilian life, please be aware of the VA's program called Coaching Into Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching Into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call. Toll-free is 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, the VA's Coaching Into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I'd like to remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. There are a lot of veterans out there who are in crisis, and you can be very helpful by getting in touch with that crisis line. Again, that number is 1-800-273-8255. 5-5 and press 1. Back to you, David.
Okay, we have two things I'd like to touch on. We've got about 5 minutes left on our show tonight, and get your thoughts on this too, Rick. They're about two films actually tonight on PBS TV. You have to check your local listings, of course, because depending on what what area of the country, what time zone you're in, may be a different time. But on last week's show, we had internationally acclaimed filmmaker Rick Burns talking about his documentary called VA, The Human Cost of War. Well, that's airing tonight on PBS, so you may want to check that out. It's basically an hour-long documentary to explore the history of the VA from the troubled beginnings as the Veterans Bureau back in 1920 all the way up to the modern VA system. Rick Burns and his crew are famous for their thorough research, and that's demonstrated on this film. They've interviewed the current VA secretary, the prior VA secretary, government officials, members of Congress, researchers, professors, and, of course, veterans, veteran family members, veteran organization leaders, et cetera. So it should offer an interesting perspective. And then the other thing real quick, Rick, I'd like you to give your thoughts on is the new documentary called Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, which I know you saw this past week, Rick. It deals with the burn pits and the illnesses and cancers, et cetera, that have afflicted some of our veterans from the Iraq and Afghanistan war. What can you share with us about your thoughts on that film, Rick?
Well, a couple of things. David, as you know, we represent a number of veterans who experience the burn pits, and kind of like what Brian said in terms of being able to visualize it. But I, up until that documentary, I really didn't have an opportunity to visualize what the burn pits were all about. And one of the things that a bunch of our clients have said is that when the burn pits are really stoking, and you look up in the sky and it could be a beautiful sunny day, it's so thick that you can't see the sky. You can't see the sun. And in the documentary, there are a number of scenes where you really visualize that, and you can see exactly what these veterans are talking about. And it is horrific to think that these men and women have to live in that while they're serving. That was one aspect of it. And then I remember one of the veterans, I forget his name often, you probably remember his name, you've seen it a couple times. And he said, when I signed up, when I enlisted, I accepted that I could die. I accepted that I could be injured. But what I did not, would not accept or would not expect is that when I got back here to the United States, that my government, the VA, would abandon me. And he was specifically talking about his exposure to the burn pits. And the fact that the military clearly knew what they were doing and how they were exposing our men and women to this toxic environment that we now call burn pits. So it had an impact on me, I must say. And I'm trying to now get this film in the Ocala area here in Florida because I think it's something that... we can get as many people to see this, it will hopefully help move our politicians and Congress to do something and act. As one of our guests said when I asked her the question, is the burn pits the Iraqi and Afghanistan veterans Agent Orange? And she said, absolutely. And clearly that's what it is. And hopefully the burn pit situation won't take as long as the Agent Orange situation did to get men and women presumptively compensated for those
right.
exposures.
Right.
And then that other thing about that Dr. Miller in Nashville, I couldn't believe that.
Yeah, that was a doctor. We're about running out of time, but Dr. Miller was a doctor, a civilian doctor, who initially the military was sending some veterans to for more testing because some of the initial tests, x-rays and other tests, CAT scans, weren't really detecting what the problem was. It wasn't until they did actual biopsies that they realized the unique type of harm that was caused by some of the toxic substances. But, yeah, the film is Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, How America Poisoned Its Soldiers. You can find out more about it and where it's showing. Go to Facebook.com and do a search for the Burn Pits documentary. You can also go to Tug.com, which is T-U-G-G.com, Tug.com, and type in the name, Delay, Deny, Hope to Die. That's the name of the film. It's a big one. So we're about out of time for tonight. It's been a quick show. We'd like to thank our special guest, Brian Wizard, for being on our show. I'd like to recognize our show sponsors, American Legion Post 303, Mr. Charles Newman, and Corey and Hurley Law Group, and thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsome. I'd like to thank our listeners for tuning in, and please tune in next week, same time, same station, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, I hope you have a great week. Good night.
Good night, David.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.